What is this one? 41?
41. Episode 41 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson. That's Kelly Galt.
Welcome back.
And we wanted to start today just by acknowledging the incredible life of Flip Pallet. Passed away yesterday. When you're tragic. Probably listening to this on Tuesday, but yeah, I mean, Flip Pallet brought a lot of people into the sport. I know you knew Flip a little bit, right?
Yeah, I knew Flip, not well, but I mean, I know, you know, through Brian and through different shows and doing things and enough that, you know, that he was a, there's only certain people that get like Flip. Yeah. You know, zero negativity, wouldn't tolerate it. I mean, you start talking shit about anything, he just didn't want to be around it. And it's just that guy. I mean, and if you don't know Flip Pallet's voice, then I don't know, you must be pretty new in this business, but so iconic, the Walker's K, and, you know, it was just one of them things. It's
go back and watch Walker's K Chronicles if you haven't seen it. I mean, it's...
If you've ever seen a Yeti commercial, and Yeti basically, if you ask me, he launched him.
Yeah.
And, you know, coolers or whatever, but his voice is the voice of Yeti.
He's got such an incredible voice.
Yeah. He's the Kurt Gowdy of our generation.
Yeah.
If people don't know Kurt Gowdy, he's had that voice. He was a basketball announcer, I think, to start with.
Really?
Baseball, yeah. He wasn't an outdoors game in the 60s or... But he was huge before that, but he's one of those iconic voices. But Flip's, you told me that he's part of the reason you're here.
Yeah,
in the outdoor industry or whatever.
Some folks know this about me. I used to work a tech job in Seattle out of college, and I watched a video that Flylords put out where it's Flip Pallet kind of narrating it, and I think he wrote it all, and it's about the legacy of Lefty Cray, you know, another absolutely legendary angler. Who's now passed on, but I believe the video is called Time. And there's kind of two main things in that video that hit me. And like, I remember the first time I watched it, I cried. I mean, it's so powerful what he did, what he said in it. But you know, he talked about how he was a banker for a while and he is financing other people's dreams, right? He's sitting at a desk, writing checks for other people to pursue their dreams. And he's sitting behind this desk. And the line in there that hit me was something like, you know, he said he's 80 something now. And if he'd been a banker his whole life, he would have retired long ago. But what he would have gained in an early retirement isn't worth what he would have lost by living a life outdoors.
Nobody lived a bigger life outdoors than him.
Yeah. I mean, hunting, fishing, did it all. So that really inspired me. And then the other one, you know, he talks about when you're young, you have all the time in the world. And then as you get older, you realize that all you have is time.
Yeah.
It's just the most important thing. So really powerful stuff and just, I mean, absolute legend of a man.
Brian told me he had a hunting trip planned for Saturday morning.
Really?
And just a routine operation just went bad. And just, man, never, he was just, for me, it was just fun. He was so instrumental in my life and just from observation.
Yeah.
I hadn't been around him, but just at shows and different things and just, but man, I just some guy should go by a grizzly attack and that's one of them. He's bigger than life. I bet he was a better hunter than he was an angler.
Yeah.
And it's hard to get better than he was as an angler. That's speaking high cotton.
Right.
I mean, he is, just do yourself a favor and go look up anything you can about the guy because it's all worth watching, every inch of it.
Watching Walker's K, it's just, somebody's line is like, cool, you either is or you ain't.
No, Keith Richards.
It's Keith Richards' line.
Hmm?
Yeah. Did I get it right?
Yeah, cool. I asked him how he kept his cool all his life and he goes, it's simple, mate, you either is or you ain't.
Flip Pallet is. Go watch Walker's K. I mean, it's just the coolest. He does a lot of gear fishing too. He's not a pretentious fly guy. I mean, brought a lot of people to the sport.
Primitive archer.
Yep.
Made his own arrows. Only fletched his arrows with turkeys he'd shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
he shot everything in the world. Yeah. I mean, he's more of like in the Keys.
Yeah.
Nothing was safe.
Nothing. Well, yeah. If you guys have any, you know, flip palette anecdotes, I love reading the comments about, you know, stuff like that. If you guys ever met him, whatever, leave a comment. Maybe we'll read a couple on the next podcast.
And, you know, Brian Fletching has been doing stuff with Flip for years. There's a lot of he's got a lot of tutorials on Brian's site.
Yeah,
on
Matter of Outfitters Instagram, YouTube. Yeah, check
him out.
He's
got a ton. Yeah, tragic.
So, yeah, it just felt wrong to start this any other way than talking about Flip. I mean, truly one of the legendary figures in fly fishing. If you don't know him, go check him out. He's awesome. All right, let's get into it. So, Kelly and I are doing a live podcast at the Wretched Mess. Once you're listening to this, it will be the upcoming weekend. So it's the 5th and 6th. Kelly will be tying alongside Jake Schutz, right?
Yeah.
Which, that'll be a hoot. You're not going to want to miss that. I'm sure that's going to be a lively conversation. And then Kyler, our 19-year-old wunderkind, is also tying alongside Jeff Peterson. Jeff's a mainstay in West Yellowstone.
Oh, yeah, forever.
If you've ever fished Barnes Hole, you know Jeff. He's the guy who's threatening to drown your own nymphers. Yeah. Yeah. I remember sitting up there talking to him, and he's like, fishing sucks. Two Euro nymphers came in 2 days ago and just cleaned the whole place out. All the fish moved out. He goes, if I see him in here again, I'm going to fucking drown him. So if a Euronymph gets drowned,
they used to say that. They used to say that about streamer guys. Yeah. We've been replaced.
Hey, thank the Lord. all right.
A lower rung on the totem pole.
So let's jump into what's Kelly pissed off about. And I've got good news and bad news for you.
Gourd head.
Good news. You don't have to come up with something you're pissed off about.
Perfect.
Bad news is I'm about to piss you off.
You waking up pisses me off.
Yeah, I know. So a couple weeks back, I think Matt approached you about ordering a bunch of trout space stuff to the shop. He'd written a big order.
Mm-hmm.
You said, don't do it. He did it. So
I didn't say don't do it. Oh. I said, don't go huge on it in the fall.
Oh, I said, he told me that you said, don't do it.
No, so, I said, don't go.
All right, well,
no, I
thought it's kind of a flop of a segment.
I told you to
now.
Quit asking spay questions if we don't have shit to sell, and people call and they're pissed off because if you're going to talk about it, sell it if you're going to. But, and then he told me that I could go 3 to 9 deep. I says, it's fall. We don't go 9 deep in, you know,
fall.
But we need to. And that's, yeah. And so I'm not, no, I wasn't pissed about it at all. I'm more pissed about the fact that I was pissed when I thought it was going to turn fall so quick. It's like, it's been 90 here for 3 months. And the last 2 days, spectacular weather for fishing. For those who missed it, stayed home because it was raining. It was unbelievable last 2 days.
I call it a torrential downpour.
1 inch, there's monumental in this place. I mean, to get an inch in a day, not a 24
constant.
Hour.
Yeah.
I mean, you look outside.
That's what I was pissed off about is I woke up, my bed is soaking wet because my topper's leaking. I live in my car.
Yeah, it's a car.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's cool. Today, when I was eating dinner before I came over, I was like looking out, the clouds are all winter fallish, looking just badass, you know, and I got my new Grundon's fall shirt. It's nice and cozy. Bug outside, oh shit, still like 60. It looked like,
I mean, oh shit, I'm wearing a sweatshirt and a
flannel. Everybody over here, when I looked over, I could see all these guys have got on sweaters and hoodies, and you know, they look like Devane with his, you know, puffy Patagonia on when it's 90 out, and everybody's puffed up, and I'm like, I must be freezing up there. I walked outside, I'm like, whoa, but I do like this new shirt. It's perfect fall. It got me all. There's nothing like that feeling when fall first hits.
Those first few days, it's
immediately I thought, I wonder how many fish pushed into the barns.
Yeah.
When you said the barns,
pool,
they move early up there.
Well, it's completely closed right now.
Yeah, I know.
So I'm hoping this cold spell opens it back up.
Well, they move up there in August. Yeah. They always have. And a push like that, oh my God.
I know. Jake and I were talking about it in the store today.
And I got my Bucky flies.
Nice. Bucky sent you some bugs?
Huh? You didn't know this?
No.
He dropped them off. This guy is such a spectacular.
Bucky McCormick, right?
Yeah. He's
Blue Ribbon Flies, the lucky Bucky.
Evidently, I bitched. I said, you know, somebody said they got a, you got a, some wet flies from Bucky.
Yeah.
I says, I never got shit from Bucky. And whenever so he dropped me off a bus thing, it's like, just so perfect.
It's a Bucky tied lucky Bucky.
Yes. So, but he's got a whole bunch of them in there. Yeah. So, the first thing I thought of is, do I run up there the day it opens and throw all Bucky's flies, and or do I go up and be me?
You should probably throw some Bucky flies.
Did I ask you to fondle about my shit?
Sorry, I washed my hands at least sometime in the last week.
Doesn't matter.
I thought you handed those to me to look at them.
I wanted you to look in this box.
My bad, I can't do anything right.
Never.
That
guy that fondled my Atlantic salmon fly.
It's like when I tied a fly the other day. It's actually the fly I got some action on, and then Will was eating fried chicken with his fingers, and he's like, "Oh, let me come look at that thing." And he pulls it out of the vise. He's like, "Oh yeah, that's gonna like
it's all grease."
I'm like, "Oh, nice. It smells like chicken now. Scented. Sweet.
Maybe they like that."
Okay, so long story short, we are now selling some spay gear. So we've got
basically
everything for trout applications up to light steelhead stuff. So a couple of different rods that all the guys in here fish. That Echo TR is a great stick. I've got the SR as well. And that's great trout stuff because they're kind of shorter sticks, smaller rivers. You know, you don't need to throw it 75 feet with that stuff. So we have it all online, all the guys in the shop. I mean, when I first moved out here, everybody laughed at me for throwing spay rods. And now I think every single person who works here owns one now. And does it. I mean, it's not the most effective way to fish, but I enjoy it. It's fun. So
a lot of trout spay guys,
a lot of trout spay. So call in, everybody's knowledgeable about it. You know, the grain weight stuff, the tip stuff, it's super complicated, but, everybody here is pretty well versed in it now. So slidein.com. The other thing, we got these Grundin shirts in that have our logo on them. Slidein.
Very, very they're awesome. Fall-ish.
Yeah. They got this kind of like waffle.
I can't believe you can wear that in here right now.
I'm sweating my ass off.
You got a sweatshirt on.
Yeah, I know. I've got a Red Shed sweatshirt on.
I am dying.
It's
and
very
I just got
hot
this heavy. I didn't know you were going to one up me and bring it like all fancy ass and shit.
Sorry. I hope this pops
up. I look
again.
Better.
Probably. and last note on steelhead stuff, real quick. Well, actually, we might talk about it some more in this podcast. It's a good question. But one of our listeners, Britt Hoberg, messaged me on Instagram from the official Instagram account of the Santa Cruz Wharf. And he said, "Hey, can I get your email? I want to send you some flies." He never said his name. So he sent me his email address. So I emailed him and I said, "Hey, it's Braden. By the way, I don't think I ever got a name. Would love to see some flies. You know, hope your day's going well." And he emails me back and the first line says, "My name is Britt and I am a man." It just cracked me up. Somebody was reading it over my shoulder. But he sent me a bunch of flies, a bunch of steelhead bugs. I was just out steelheading and I got a fish to bump one of his flies, took a couple steps up, changed to a different one of his flies, and that fish ate it. So got a steelhead in late August, which is cool. It's my earliest one ever on one of Britt's flies. So maybe I'll throw a photo of the fish in here, but super cool. Thanks, Britt, for sending. He said he didn't want a shout out or anything, but I got it because that was pretty cool. Pretty neat.
Didn't send Kelly any flies.
No. In fact, he actually said, "I'm sure people send Kelly everything, but I bet nobody sends you much. So here's some flies. I got some pity flies. I got a sticker for you, actually."
Yeah, you're breaking my heart.
Yeah. All right. Do you have anything that you were actually pissed off about you wanted to talk about?
No.
Good.
Did have something that was funny happen.
What's that?
Took Mel to this fancy restaurant, one of Johnny's favorites.
I've redacted the name of the restaurant because Kelly got it wrong. It's actually the Gallatin River Lodge. So every time he says it wrong, think Gallatin River Lodge. Gallatin River Lodge, Gallatin River Lodge.
Beautiful place, right? My bartender's Charlie Craig. So we go, see this.
Wait, the River House, like the...
Gallatin River
Barbecue Lodge. Joint?
Huh? No, it's a very, very high-end restaurant. Okay. And I think it's Gallatin River
House. The River House is that barbecue joint on the river.
No, it's not a barbecue joint.
Bucks T4?
No, it's down. It's what I'm telling you.
Oh, okay.
Look it up. We should look it up. And but at any rate, Charlie comes out and they see us, and then we don't get, and we sit there for like, I don't know, a long time, half hour, but we don't care. We're really, Charlie makes a great drink. And we're sitting there, and finally he comes out, and he goes, how's everything? I said, I don't know. I haven't seen anybody. He goes, holy shit. He goes crazy. And he's like, what? What? You know, and he starts to bounce all around. I says, well, you know, you make a good drink, Charlie, but oh my God, oh my God. He says, well, he turns around like in the dead run to go get new drinks, and just, he's pissed because we haven't been served, right, of anything. He goes, well, at least we know Kelly can talk.
Yeah, that's what we needed.
I said, you better start listening closer because you're getting called out, you piece of shit. Yeah. Yeah, it was great. Nicholas and him and everybody. Funny. It was great, but it was hilarious because he's in this panic. He can't believe that we haven't been, well, at least we know Kelly can talk.
Now, what'd you say when you walked in?
Mel's like, what?
What? Huh? You're on how many hours of talking today?
Right now?
Yeah.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours.
Pretty good.
Between podcast interviews and
another one random phone conversation.
And now two randos. That one was with Jake from Hardy. And what was the other? We had, yeah, two industry interview things. And hey.
Busy man. A lot of talking.
Yeah.
All right, this question comes from, did I mention Wretched Mess already?
Mm-hmm.
I think I did. Okay. Friday, Saturday.
Yep, Friday, Saturday. And who's it's not this Friday, Saturday, is it?
Once they're listening to this, it will be.
Oh, that's right. This goes out Tuesday.
Because it goes out Tuesday.
Copy that.
Yep. Okay, Harry House. That's a great name. Email is Harry Casa. It's awesome.
There's a lot of
H-A-R-R-Y, not A-R-Y. His question is, hello, how important is durability in a fly pattern? Assuming it is, what are the factors that make a fly durable? How can a non-fly tire tell by looking at a fly if it is likely to be durable? Thanks, Harry.
Oof. What makes a fly durable is application of everything, the beginning, the thread tension. That's the what all fly tying is thread tension. And then
I learned that tension. The other day.
What?
When tension? I was tying and you yelled at me, you said, you've got no tension, this is bullshit.
Yeah, you learned it. But you were being pretty sloppy.
I was. I'm not very good.
People that don't have good thread tension tend to do what you were doing because you hadn't tied in a while.
Yeah.
And they get close and they watch it too close. And they kind of, instead of having a nice even tension, but it would be really hard. The only way to like look at a fly and say if it's durable or not, so that if in some way, shape, or form it felt loose, its body was. The thing that makes a fly not durable is if it's not, if everything isn't secured properly, and maybe you go to tighten one material like a piece of, I don't know, Mylar ribbing or something, and you don't make it tight, when as soon as a tooth touches it, it goes under
back
and pops
right
it up.
Yeah.
Up comes none. But I've seen flies where you can just touch them, like this one Kyler tied, you know, you can just manhandle it and see that it's nothing's gonna happen to it.
For folks who aren't watching, he's kind of grabbing the head of it and twisting it a little bit to see if there's any move in there.
Bend in my hand and I'm just playing with things. You can lift the hair up to see, but you would never want to do that to a fly that you, I mean, don't go in and manhandle the shit out of a fly in a bin because you're going to move materials, right? But if I wouldn't be afraid to look at it if I thought something didn't have integrity. I mean, you can look at the heads to see how well the heads are done, make sure they got varnish on them. that's about it. You know, you can see if tails are. It's pretty hard to find a commercial fly that's done by a real company that's not pretty damn.
That's
good.
Not pretty good. Yeah,
I had a, when I was doing taxidermy still, I had a guy, Kelly Siebels, who was my bird guy, bird instructor. And Kelly was just, you know, he's just a great guy. But there was one, and Kelly's completely quit. You know, he was the best, one of the top three in history. Wrote a lot of books about it. And but we go to the best bird guy in the world, who's Frank Neumeyer, who lived in outside of Gladwin, I think Gladwin, in Michigan, and we had done this huge diorama Kelly and I had together. It's like a 20-foot mountain scene, running water and ducks and fish in it and all this shit, cool. Right? Really cool.
I'm picturing Bass Pro.
Yeah. Before that, you know? But it was, you know, you could look through, the bottom was all full log and it was half of a hexagon and it's like, oh, here. And you can see it's glass, there's fish underneath mounts and then his birds are up there. But we needed some epoxy and we go to Frank Neumeier's house. Frank is, no one's ever won more in the taxidermy world than Frank. His birds are just beyond real. And so we get there, we, you know, called ahead. And we, you know, we call ahead and we get Frank's there and he comes in and he comes out to the door to meet us. He's got this incredible studio. And he comes out and we've got this van full of birds. You know, and you're looking at a mounted bird. You don't think manhandle or anything like that. And Frank's like, and he's always loved Kelly's work. Cause, and he walks up and he looks at the bird. This is not really anything to do with fly fishing, but he looks at the bird and they're on these little wood stands because they got wires coming out of their feet. And we got to position them in different areas in the diorama that we built. And so he's got these birds and they got one little board on top of two more boards so you can wrap the wires around and they just stay there and they stand up, you know, they don't fall over. And he goes, can I look at your birds? And Kelly goes, sure. And he reaches in, he grabs that thing, shakes the living shit out of it like that. And I'm like, holy shit, who would do such a thing, right?
You don't touch the art.
And then and Kelly laughs and he goes, he loves to do that. He goes, this is what I love about Siebel's work. He has structural integrity. And he sets the bird down. He goes, so what do we need? Just, I mean, if he'd done that to one of my birds, you know, the head would have went flying, the wings would have went flying, eyes would have fallen out of his head. And he's just like, and it was savage. And Kelly just shook his head laughing. He goes, does that all the time.
Does that all the time. But it's durable.
But it's durable, and that comes from structural integrity, which is all thread tension. And, I mean, if you just simply look at a fly, I wouldn't just reef on it and start ripping stuff because you can break feathers. They're just feathers. But if you just look at the fly, like I'm stroking this fly's hackle or its wing back, I can see that the body's completely tapered exactly the same. There's no loose spots. I can see the ribbing's not loose. The head's beautiful. The collar's on right. Everything's perfect, right? So you know, you can just go, you know, and then there's a little bit of chance. I mean, teeth, I had somebody send a fly back that had only caught six fish, and they were good fish, but it only lasted for six.
That's a great fly.
And I had trouble not, we might have sent him a new Barely Legal, but fish have teeth, right? And this shit is made of feathers and hair and fuzz and thread. And so when the teeth get in there, and if you caught six good browns, I think that's what he said. Wouldn't matter if the rainbows are browns, but you've got six good fish. You should, you know, well, chalk that up as great day and put the fly on a bin, you know, someplace and save it. And just there. That's a lot of fish on a fly.
I mean, I think for me, it's like if a fly lasts, in the streamer world, if a fly lasts two fish, like that's a well-tied bug.
Yeah, I want it to go
if
for more.
If it blows up on one, I'm like, well, maybe a tooth got in a really bad spot.
Yeah, I mean, that's generally what happens is if a head comes undone, that's a shit tie.
Yes.
Then I'm not happy. But if you think about what your bodies are made of, nowadays some of the bodies are spun on wire.
Yeah.
You know, the chenille bodies, some of the micro brush stuff. But for the most part, most of those are tied on cotton thread with whatever material it is and twisted around it, you know, in the package. So, you know, you get a real trout and he hooks a tooth in it. What the hell do you expect? I mean, shit's going to, wouldn't matter who tied it.
No.
It's just that random act. It's why, like, we do a lot of counter wrapping with wire, right? You do wire to go on. A real tooth's going to take that wire just as quick as it does the thread.
That's, I think, the most common deformity I see in you know, I primarily fish Kelly streamers. I don't really know why, but...
you're going to get one on one someday.
One of these days. But the one fish I've caught on a streamer so far, what I see is, you know, they either rip that wire out and then your hackle comes undone.
And the hackle is going to anyway because it breaks the hackle.
Yes, exactly.
And it's just...
And guess what? Some of them still fish.
I kind of look at mine like, I don't, two is not enough for me. It's got to do more. I mean, a half dozen fish, though, is, I just, because I'm not talking about fish that can barely eat. I'm talking about ones that can eat it, right? And they've got teeth that cut. How many videos have we shot? I don't think it's happened yet. Shy of the pike one, they weren't all my fault. But I'm bleeding constantly. I reach down to grab a fish. I go in. I don't like to have the fish hooked long. I like to take the hook out with my hand because I actually can see.
I think you're a masochist.
I like bleed a lot. Yeah. And it's like, so if it cuts a, 3/16 of an inch hole in your hand, imagine what the little cotton thread's getting taken. Yeah. So, and you're not, and you're just like this. And, that and, thing's yeah, reefing.
That out. Fish is not hitting your hand going 40 miles per hour.
Yeah, and doing and this.
Shake, at, yeah, at the death net, hole.
Doing all that shit. Yeah. And your fly's going around. Jesus, where's that?
We can't talk about that one yet.
What, this one?
We can talk a little bit about it.
This is a buddy of mine's. We can talk about this later, but this is what a brown trout did to a Rapala.
Yeah.
I mean, tore the thing. The hooks are all straightened out. The body's busted in half. And, I mean,
also,
if that was a fly, it's going to be shredded. But who gives a shit? That's your fish. A 30-inch on a – you should put a display box of your fly up with it.
Yes. Yeah, and, like, I always struggle with that, like the sentimental nature, attaching value to things that don't really actually have any, but
that's what I think about you.
Oh, great. when I'm a thing, when I get a big fish, oftentimes I'm like, man, I kind of want to cut that fly off and save it to kind of memorialize it. They're like, man, it's a fly.
It depends. If you drop a 30,
if I got a 30, I'd probably save the fly.
I used to save flies when I was young. I've been a taxidermist all my life. I mean, for all practical purposes, I was like, Jesus, 20 or something, 19, 20. I don't even know when it happened. And I've never mounted a fish of my own.
Really?
The fish that I took the first with the worlds in?
Yeah.
That I think Jerry caught that fish.
Yeah, he doesn't remember no, either.
Neither
though,
do.
Right?
We were on a quest to this fish, John Clusing caught. I know when I first started, I would kill fish just to mount them.
Yeah.
But they might be 16 inches. They might be 20. I don't know.
Yeah.
I didn't, they weren't like,
not
oh what, shit.
You're mounting them for practice, not.
Exactly. Like, and then I gave them away, and I would just mount them. But I didn't, but I did, I used to save flies. Mm-hmm. I mean, my first really big streamer brown, I saved the fly. But then I don't know what I did with them. I don't. It was a fun thought for. Yeah. I see people that can do that. Yeah. You go into people's dens where they've got, they got their arrow and their broadhead and they got the mount and they got this and that. And they got the fish that they caught here and the picture of them and their buddy. And I just never did that. Right. I don't know why. I mean, shit. It's not true. I kept my first, I got an 18-pound Atlantic. And I kept that, not because I was going to, I killed it. It was the worst fighting fish in the history of fish. It was a beautiful 18-pound buck. And I was swinging a Micey shrimp in a size, on a 4-hook. It's a big Micey's like that.
Yeah.
And it ate it. And I set up on it, and it rolled twice, and it was like, it just came to shore. Rolled twice, and it made a little tiny jump forward, and then it just came to shore and rolled over dead. It ate that thing so deep, when I set the hook, it busted 3 rakers right at the base, bled out instantly, right? And I'm like, shit, and I would have never kept it. Then I kept it, and I mounted that fish for myself, but I had no sentimental value whatsoever. I mean, right. It was nothing. It was just a fish that ate the fly. It wasn't like I had this great fight or, mermaid came up and made out with me afterwards. It was just like, it was just always been a dream
of
mine.
Where'd you come up with this shit?
Well, you fish alone a lot of shit goes through your mind, And so, but I think I told that story about mounting that fish, and I was getting ready for another world championships, and Doc Ellis always had this thing. If it's not right, don't fall in love with it. And in taxidermy, you've got this thing called a fatal flaw. If they can find one in your a fatal flaw. It can be anything, right?
Yeah.
And you just don't get judged, right? It's just like you're done. You're toast, right? And so, any rate, I'm doing this fish, and I had this junction between the head and the body, and I was playing around, and I kept looking at it and looking at it, and I kept saying to myself, nobody could see this. And I kept hearing Doc's voice. I was rolling in on 200 hours plus in that fish at this point. It's on its pedestal. It's up here. It's all sitting there. And I'm like, I'm just staring at it. And I slowly reached over and I'm staring at that head. And I heard Doc's voice pick this knife. I'm like, and I shoved it right in his head. And I drilled it right through that thing where I was looking, right there. And I went, there. I don't have to think about it anymore. And I was done. And I was like, don't fall in love with it. It's not right. But
wow.
Yes. It was very, it was cool. I still see it sitting there. And people come and go, oh, my God, what happened to your fish? I go, I fell in love with it. It wasn't right. It wasn't going to win.
Yeah.
And it was like, it was cool. I think I had 217 hours, 18 hours in at that point.
If you don't think you have a shot of winning, why?
What's the point?
You've seen that great clip of some old golfer. I can't remember his name, but I think he's an announcer now, but he's interviewing Tiger after his very first pro tournament. And he says, you know, so you got like seventh or something. How do you feel? He goes, well, I wanted to win. He goes, that's a pretty cocky thing to say. You're like 19 years old or whatever he was. You're really young and you're on the PGA Tour. And he goes, well, I've always, you know, subscribed to the theory that if you don't think you can win, why even show up? And the guy goes, you'll learn, son. Second's pretty good. And I think Tiger goes, second's bad. Third's even worse. Goes, you'll learn, son. Second's pretty good on the tour. And then, you know, years later, they get back together and he apologizes. So like, I didn't think you were going to be who you turned out to be.
Yeah, well, yeah. There you go.
I like that mindset. Don't fall in love with it.
It's not right. And actually, that was not Doc's line either. That was his instructor at Michigan Dental School. And why Doc was such a good, I don't think he was the best he ever did. You know, tying. He's back in, by the way. Tying?
Yeah.
After our trip?
Yeah. He's tying a bunch now?
It's so disgusting. He's doing Euro nymphs.
Oh, God, Doc. Yeah, you fished him for the first time.
Oh, my God.
Right?
He'd never seen anything, right?
He said, what is this?
Oh, my God. They're off they go, right? Just killing fish. And it's like, boom. And he said, send me everything I need for all the Euro nymphs. So I had Matt and those guys put this bag of stuff. And he sent me a picture and there's like 20 and they're just absolutely perfect. And I go, that is so cool. Yeah, I mean, awesome. 89 years old, he's back in the game.
So going back to this durability question, if you're going to go into a fly shop, and I think, you know, with Euro nymphs, if you touch those things, you can put your kind of nail on them. And if that resin isn't cured, that's kind of the only thing you could do to see, to test their durability. Theoretically, they should be incredibly durable.
I would guess they still hold up.
Most Euro nymphs don't.
Even if they're gooey.
Yeah.
Or gooey. That's gooey. Gooey. And that's the French pronunciation.
Yeah. Gooey. So then streamer wise, you know, like looking for flies that have counter ribbed wire.
I would also look at the heads.
Yeah.
If they're a hair head or if there are any of these heads that have. Now let's rephrase this. If they've got a glue-on eye that is sitting on top of hair or synthetic, it's going to fall off. It's just going to fall off.
And the fish don't give a shit.
Yeah, and they're usually on the top of the freaking head anyway. Yeah. But they're going to fall off. So don't quit fishing your fly. If they have dumbbell eyes, there's one thing you could do, and I wouldn't mind if you did it in my shop. If you twist, don't reef on it like it's a freaking, you know, frozen Coke bottle like this, but if you go up and you move that, if the eyes move, your fly's gonna, it's soft, right? And they shouldn't move, but don't reef on this. I mean, it's
you're not trying to break it.
It's thread.
Yes,
it's thread around a hook, and it's a round thing around another round thing, and it has to be secured. And you can reef. I watched a guy do this once with a dry fly. I go, exactly what did that accomplish? He goes, well, I wanted to see if it's going to... I says, not a fly in here that'll go through that. I mean, there's not a Rapala that would go through that.
Right.
You can't... you know, don't test anymore. But
you're not looking for 80 pounds of force. You're looking for a half pound.
Put your hand on it and just kind of, you know, if they're not loose in your hand, they're not... Yeah. You break... Think about it. It's thread and lacquer. as soon as you break that adhesion, I mean, whatever you're doing, it's just thread. And they might move a little, but you'll know if it's just...
And basically, what you're looking for, if I'm not mistaken, is if it spins at all very easily, it's not tight at all.
Just put it
down.
But
if you just try to spin it lightly and it holds, it's probably...
It's on big streamers. Don't do that to dry flies.
Don't do that on dry flies.
Dry fly, a dry fly, a fish you get, if you get three fish on a dry fly, that's a good... That's
great.
Good. That is great. That is great. The wing's going to be screwed up anyway. Something's wrong with it. Doesn't mean you can't get six, or all you're going to write in and tell me, I get 12 out of my fly. Great. Great. I don't. And that doesn't matter if I tie them or I buy them. They just, there's a lifespan to everything.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Half lives, right?
Yeah.
The half life of a fly should be 1.5 fish or something.
Yeah. I mean,
the other day, Jake.
Here's one that never goes wrong. Bivisible. Yeah. Bivisible, just hackle. I might get 6 or 8 fish on it. But generally when I'm fishing flies like that, there's little pissant 12-inch brookies or, 8-inch brookies or, whatever it is. They're smaller fish. But there's just, even bluegills can ruin flies.
Totally.
They don't have physics.
They don't have teeth, but they're
getting all around it.
When you think about the break strength of this thread, and then if you get a fish that weighs a 0.5 pound to 1 pound, pulling on it. I mean, that's the...
Back and forth in its face, and you're...
Waving around. I mean, there's a lot of stuff that can go
wrong. But if that's a tying question, I will tell you, one thing that I think has changed our industry in tying is nano silk. It's my favorite thread in the world. And you can go to 12-aught and 18-aught, and the thinner the thread, it's so strong. It's so thin that everything bonds tighter, right? Mm. You don't have the bulk, and that's what bulk is what ruins a fly. Too much excessive wraps, 3 good wraps, everything should be fine, especially with this new thread. And there's a lot of new threads out there. I just happen to really like the nano silks, but the Semperfly stuff. But there's a lot of great threads now. It's the biggest advancement, I think, in our entire industry. But that's what makes a really, if you're tying your own, watch one of my videos. I say it on every one of them. 3 turns is maximum for securing anything on earth. Maximum. Watch David McField.
I must not have watched that one.
It's the antichrist to strength that it just kills it. It's bulky. You'll see people. They'll go like this. They'll put one. They'll do a set, an anchor. They'll be good, and they'll just automatically throw 3 more behind it. With no tension.
Well, that day you were watching me
tie.
So I just
built shit up.
I did a couple, because it seems like it should lock it down better. And you're like, that's useless. Why are you doing that, you stupid moron?
I did not say that.
Yeah, it was actually much meaner, I think. Yeah, and, but I learned.
But yeah, it's just bulk. I use the same analogy. If you've ever built something, like you're making a stud wall and you're putting 3 spikes in, right? 3 16s. 8 doesn't make it stronger. It makes it weaker. You just start blowing things apart. What thread does, it starts piling off your hook.
Yeah.
And so it's no longer...
Well, it's just more chances
for... It's bulk. It doesn't make anything. But if that was a question on looking at flies...
Yeah, I think it was phrased from the non-tire.
Yeah, from looking at a fly, make sure you look at the heads. And look at the bulk of the flies. If there should be more than one fly in your bin, right? And you look at it, make sure all 20 of them have relatively the same size heads. It'll just tell you if this is like, these are all well tied.
Yeah.
That's the hallmark of a great tire. When you put 6, 10, 20 flies down and you can't tell them apart, they go in a line, the heads all have 3 or 4 turns, they all have 3 turns of hackle.
I was looking through
David McField.
McField box.
Yeah.
I mean, I was counting ribs.
No, shit. Him make the wrong.
Identical.
No, there's no difference.
I mean, identical.
It's David McField. Are you kidding?
It's like they were made in a factory. They're that precise.
He is his own factory.
He's a robot.
He might be.
Yeah.
AI.
Yeah, yeah.
They just put his voice in there to keep you thinking, isn't
it? Yeah, there you go.
He didn't and kick both their ass.
All right, I think we wore that one out. Thanks for the question, Harry House. Great name, nice alliteration. Next question coming from Ethan Kirby. He says, hey, Kelly and Braden. Wanted to ask your perspective on catch and release versus keeping fish, and when it is okay to keep. Growing up, and even to this day, we would always do catch and release if we were going out for a day trip or even a multi-day longer float trip. However, oftentimes when backpacking to a backcountry lake in the Beartooths, or now the San Juans, where I live in Colorado, I would keep 1 to 2 each to eat and let the rest go. I've since learned that this is frowned upon by some in the fishing community and have gotten chastised for it online. From my perspective, it's similar to hunting and conservation discussion, and as long as you aren't overfishing one particular river or spot, it shouldn't be a big deal. Curious what your guys' thoughts are. All the best, Ethan.
Want me to tee that off? Because I will be the turd in the punch bowl on this one.
Go for it.
That chair squeaks a lot.
Yeah, I know. I'll cut that out.
Oh, by the way, Mel says you say that all the time and don't cut it out, and she doesn't like it. You're going to say I'm going to cut it out, you cut it out. Oh, she told me to tell you that.
That's the humor in it is when I say I'll cut it and then I leave it.
I told you you probably had some excuse. But I will maybe just take this question because I am totally anti-total catch and release. I think it's first of all.
So you say you're pro catch and kill at times.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I told many people if I'd had to let every fish go in as a kid, I probably wouldn't have done it. But you've got canines for a reason. And just so you know, and if you want to argue with me, I hope you're over 60 because it was my generation, actually a generation before me that started this. And it was never catch and release. It wasn't like synonymous with all release. It was Lee Wolf who really, and Bob Jacklin, that it was limit your kill, don't kill your limit. And so if you want to, I mean, Mel and I go ice fishing in the winter up on Quake all the time. She'll kill a brown trout. I wouldn't eat a brown trout with your mouth. I hate them. I don't particularly like trout, right? And I love salmon. But I mean, to kill a fish, especially in a camping trip. First of all, the camping trip that you're on are all stocked fish, for God's sakes. So why do you care if you kill a stocked fish in a mountain lake?
They might not be stocked.
Oh, bullshit. Almost every. Well, I don't know about Colorado. Here.
Yeah. Yeah. Colorado, I'm sure some of those lakes have native fish in them.
I'd be really hard pressed to think so. But maybe, you know, call me in and tell me I'm full of shit. But I still don't think that you, as the alpha predator, killing two fish for dinner is going to hurt that lake. And I don't care if all your buddies do, because what are there, 20 of you up there a year? I don't think it has anything to do. And it was never supposed to be that. And if you're in a no-kill zone, obviously you don't kill.
Right.
But what's the most, you know, the best fishing on this river is between the lakes, most people think. Has the highest kill rate. You can use bait, you can use tackle, and you can keep five fish or whatever it is. I never really looked at it.
No idea.
It's total kill. Well, why is it still good?
I think there's a 40 whitefish limit up there.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, I think it's
which is
40.
The dumbest thing on earth, because we're not going to, if you want to kill something, kill the trout. Don't kill those whiteies. We need those. They feed our trout. They spawn a lot of other whiteies.
That's the only fish I'll eat around here is whitefish. We killed them once. We made whitefish tacos. Two fish.
Oh, I had some guys from Minnesota, outside of Minneapolis, and they were doing a fish fry. They killed the whiteies.
Yeah.
But they were cooking them up like gills. And I said, you know, most people smoke them, right? They're terrible smoked. They're dry as shit. Mm-hmm. They're not good smoked fish. But I said, well, if you guys weren't from Minnesota, I wouldn't take a bite. But I know you know how, because they're just big into fish fries and all that. And I take a bite, and it was great, you know? But I'm really more of a salmon style. You know, everybody says, it's too fishy. Well, that's kind of why I like fish. It's fishy. It's not grousey. It's fishy, right? And so I just really have a hard time with people. I don't have a term. If you are anti-kill a fish, great. I'm not killed a fish. I just got done saying, I've been a taxidermist since I was 19. I've never mounted my own fish. I'm not mounted. I don't kill them to mount them. Don't like eating trout. Wouldn't eat a brown trout. I hate them. I just detest them. And I'm not a really giant brook trout eater either. My dad used to make me on Sundays go out and catch. He'd always say, I want, you know, six of them like this. And he'd put his hands together. Didn't want anything bigger than 8 inches long. And go out and we'd have them at breakfast. And so we'd go out and catch, you know, 4, 5, 6, whatever, bring them back, and we'd fry them in the eggs, right? And so we'd have eggs, and you fry them with the heads on. Freaking eyes turn white, and they're sitting there like this, and I got to put a gray egg, and it comes around there. There's something about that going, no, this isn't working out for Kelly.
Me. I don't like it.
But I did it all, you know, till I was pretty old and ate lots of them. ate lots of steelhead. Used to, Sunday or December 23rd, I would always go catch a little 4 or 5 pound steelhead. You know, big for you, but you know, little one. And I would always bake it like a.
Wise to say about that picture of the fish I sent you.
No, yeah, I thought about it. It was a nice little.
It was a nice little fish. Yeah.
They're long, skinny, but anyway, I would bake them like a turkey. I'd stuff them. And I'd put bacon and onions on top, and I'd stuff them full of dressing.
Shit, I'm getting hungry.
It was actually pretty good. I didn't mind it. But to say, to get chastised by anybody, first of all, I tell them, kiss your ass anyway. If it's not illegal, kiss my ass. Yeah. If it's, you're not, no one's out there at this point in the game. If you, you know, some areas don't, it wouldn't hurt to have some of their fish taken out. They wanted to put a mandatory kill on one part of the beaver because they had too many big fish.
Yeah.
And so there's, you know, predation on all the small fish, and they can't get any recruitment. Like I said, it was always just don't kill your limit. You know, if you're going to go catch fish to freeze them, that's stupid. Yeah. You know, that's stupid. They all taste worse when they come out of a freezer anyway. And it's just like, why would you do that? So that's a different scenario. But if it's not illegal, it's not illegal. And you are not going to hurt any lake. And anybody that says, they say that all the time about Henry's Lake. Those ice fishermen are killing all the fish. Are you shitting me? You know how many people, you know how many fish are in that lake? It's a complete planted lake, right? But it's always the, if something's wrong with a fishery, it's always, they're overfishing, they're overkilling the fish. I don't buy it, never have. I don't like it when people talk about it like that.
There's a lot of theories out there on, like, big fish fisheries are often catch and keep fisheries. And there's something about taking fish out of the average size class that allows for more food to create giant fish.
Trophy hunting. First and foremost, remember I had the line about big brown trout, female brown trout are like
women.
But Mel,
I do you told want me Mel to say that, it so you like, don't get in trouble? Like,
I've said it before. They quit spawning after a certain, you know, they quit spawning and they just eat. Yeah. And they eat a lot and they get really big. Yeah. They're really couchy. You know, they get really big. And so that's where your world records come from.
Yep.
And a big brown trout will end up dying probably in that 8 to 10 year range if it's lucky. You know, they just don't have, the males just don't survive because they just keep screwing themselves to death. They fight and fight and fight. You watch them floating down the river in the fall, late fall, especially if you're fishing in the winter, like December, January, you'll see those giant browns coming down. They're just beat to shit.
Yeah, there's pus on them.
Oh, they're all scarred up and ripped and they're just going to die, right? So that's one aspect. But if you, wherever you go hunt serious trophies, it will most likely not be a flies only catch and release zone.
Right.
If you go, and it's usually tailwaters, and they're giant fish, and or you know the white, for example. I mean, you know, there's one side of it says, you know, well, that's a fish somebody else didn't get to catch. Probably weren't going to anyway, but you know, probably doesn't. It's hard to catch one of those, and it's a lot of luck involved. And so, I have no problem like. Being a taxidermist, I love doing skin mounts. I love, but I've done in the last 15 years or so, it's all I do is fiberglass or carvings. Mm-hmm. And there's, you know, they're a little like a Euro nip, got no soul. Somebody else's fish, I get it. It's better. You put your fish back. Not everybody wants to kill them. Right. It's a whole new generation. Your generation probably doesn't even know what killing and eating means. And so, but I would have not fished. I just told the story 2 days ago in here, some lady and I were talking and I said, you know, when I was a kid and I'd go to the creek steelhead fishing, you know, you're 8, 10 years old. I rode my bike a mile when two to get there, somehow got him home and walked up that and showed my mom a pair of 8, 10 pound steelhead. And it's like, I am Kurt Gowdy.
Right, I'm somebody.
Now. I am John Wayne. Look at this.
Him.
And, you know, the weird thing was is we never ate that many, but I lived on this subdivision that had a couple old ladies, two or three groups of old ladies in there, and they just loved fish. Mm-hmm. And I'd take them up a big, you know, fillet of steelhead. Oh, my God. It was like made their day. They just,
the best, yeah.
Yeah, it was great. I think I got 25 cents more for doing the one lady's lawn when I was mowing it. 50 nice. Cents instead of a quarter, right? Because I gave her so much steelhead. But it was just fun stuff, right? Yeah. It wasn't, and you're not hurting the population. I don't know. I'm just not the right total. Like it, just think of how it used to be phrased. Limit your kill, don't kill your limit.
Yeah.
And this, in most places, if you're worried about it, they don't have a limit anyway.
Yeah.
But you go up to, there's cricks around here within 10 miles of this shop that haven't seen two anglers in a year.
Right.
You're not going to, you don't want to catch a, you know, your limit of trout and have a trout dinner. It's nobody's going to ever know it happened.
Yeah.
And the fishery may, you know, it may be better for, I don't know if I'd go that far, but I don't think it could hurt it.
Yeah. I mean, I grew up going up to my grandparents' place in Central Washington and go out and fish with my dad. And if we got, you know, small mountain creeks with really small fish in them, but if we got a fish over a certain size, you know, over like 11 inches, maybe 10 mm-hmm. inches, we'd keep one or two and bring them home just because my grandma loved yeah. to cook trout. She'd, you know, fry them in a pan and
the best.
We'd have it as an appetizer before dinner. And I liked that. I don't, outside of those white fish we killed with Matt, our first summer up here, I'm pretty confident I've never killed a fish to eat it. Outside of those, never a trout. I don't really like trout that much, especially once they get big. Like yeah. killing a big trout.
Some of it's where they come from.
They get
too.
Soft and mealy and at a certain
brown
point.
Trout.
Yeah, I brown trout.
Never
little cutthroats, I think, eat really well.
I've never ate a cutty, but when Mel and I went up, we rode up one day and we were camping. I don't remember why we didn't fish, but we did. But we were going to do cutties. I wanted yeah. to taste a cutty. I had a feeling that they're soft in the hand. I think they would not eat well, but I don't know. You know, yeah. they're lake fish. And the river fish, I would change my mind, I think, maybe. Yeah. But, and again, it's that's the only, like how your grandmother does them. It's kind of like a hors d'oeuvre or a snack, like on a cracker yeah. or something.
You just
it's kind
rip
of fun.
The guts out and then fry them with the skin on in the pan. And
yeah, yeah.
Open them up.
Eat the whole thing. Yeah. Just like, but I that's a, again, that's a personal thing too. It's just, but if it's not illegal, don't listen to anybody.
Yeah.
Don't listen to that bullshit from those feel getters.
I mean, I remember showing up the very first time I ever fished between the lakes. We're getting out of the car, my dad and brother, and saw somebody walking out. It's gear guy with a giant brown trout, like 2 foot plus.
Yeah.
And he's just walking out with it, you know, gilling it. And I looked at him like, ugh. I could have caught him. Yeah, no, sure. I couldn't have. I was not going to catch
yes,
that
3
fish.
Years later, you still haven't caught it.
I still haven't caught it. So they,
and, you know, some of that, a lot of those areas have influx of migratory fish out of lakes, too.
Right.
Like us.
Yeah.
They move in now there every day. But it's just not. And I, you know, I don't have. That's why I said I'd be the turd in the punch bowl. I have no problem with a guy, gal, whoever, cracking one in the head to mount it.
Yep.
I really don't. If you got a 30, I do if you're catching a 16-incher and you want to do it.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, well, maybe that's, but it's still not, if it's legal, it's legal. And, but I don't know any, in this generation of anglers, that we're, everyone is so anti-kill, I just don't see it being an issue. I don't, and somebody's gonna write in, oh, you've got a big voice and you shouldn't tell people you're gonna wipe out these rivers. Such bullshit. No, nobody really cares anymore. They don't really even want them.
It's your line. I remember mm-hmm. the first time I heard it, it was back when I was living in Seattle, and Matt told me that it was your line, that it's a blood sport.
Yeah.
What we're doing is a blood sport. If you're not okay with killing a fish, you probably shouldn't be fishing.
If you can't land a
guess
fish.
Guess what? We're hooking an animal in the mouth and turning it around.
You're shoving a piece of steel in its
face. I'm pretty sure they feel pain. I'm pretty sure they don't like it.
I don't know about that part, but.
I mean, the way they react, it would make me think they feel pain. There's some studies out there that say that they do.
There's some that say they don't either.
But if you can fish, but you draw the line at killing them after, like, you got to go look in the mirror.
Then there's this other part of it, too, is that, you know, when you watch people sit out there, and these study, I don't buy into any study I read. I get 10 of them get a baseline. But I mean, I saw something once in fly fishing that said that 40% of all touched fish die. If that happened in this river, it'd look like a confetti parade.
You'd
That'd be such
see
bullshit.
Them everywhere.
Oh my God. How many fish
you
are
know,
you
know that is the other day something happened. I don't know if it got hot, whatever. There's
the whiteies.
The whitefish kill, right?
Yeah.
Everybody's coming in talking about it. Yeah. Because one day they saw dead fish. If that many fish if that many trout died from being caught,
oh my God,
it would look like that on steroids every day.
Every day. Yeah. And I don't buy into it. But if the one thing that I have seen, and I don't see it very often even here, this river's really fast and really hard to land fish in. Just period. End of discussion. I don't care who you are. A fish starts that radius around and goes downstream from you, you're out of control. It's just going to happen.
Yep.
And there's a chase, right? And if you can't run like you were 20, you're going to overplay your fish. A fish that's played more than 30 seconds, whew, that's really pushing the limit. But you're okay with that. And then you get me the whole story about how it was so big and I got off right at the end. Okay, but you're worried about somebody killing one fish. Bob Jacklin took all that shit about killing one damn fish, which was a total predator, past tense spawning, giant male.
Probably eating like six fish a week.
He
probably helped the lives of other fish by taking that one.
And it was a lake fish. His fins were immaculate. And there's no scarring on that fish. He lived in that lake, I guarantee you. And he came up, and it's Bob's been a taxidermist longer than probably close to as long as I've been alive.
Yeah.
Because he started when he was really young, right? He's killed one fish for himself. I don't think that hurt too many people's feelings. I mean, it hurt a lot of people's feelings. It didn't hurt our fishery.
No, I don't think
it's such a crock of shit to take any shit from anybody. and again, anyone who's that died, just diehard catch and release, wasn't around when we really needed it, before we had all the conservation things that we have now, and missed the whole point of limit your kill, don't kill your limit.
Yeah.
A single trophy isn't going to kill anything, and a single meal fish or even three or four is not going to devastate. You are the anomaly, the person that does kill one.
Yeah.
You're very rare now.
Yeah.
It's just like, you're not going to hurt the population. You're not going to do. And if you like it, I don't give a shit. It's just, that's why we have
any
regulations.
Of our employees kill trout and eat them ever. Not that I can think of. I mean,
On this river, I haven't heard of. I never hear. Even when I'm up between the lakes, I mean, in the spring, I'll see the bed rapers. If you fish spawning fish, then you are worse than the guy who kills them or girl who kills a fish.
You're a hover shitter.
You are a person that goes up and you. There's a lot of things that you could do if you fish spawners. You kill a lot more fish than anybody that kills them to eat them.
The
females abort their eggs frequently when you're out there fighting them all over the place. And
when I went up to Lando, I fished in the fall a couple times one year, and then...
And Lando wouldn't bother me if it kept 20 a day.
Right.
Jesus, they plant 350 or 500,000 fish in that lake.
There's 450,000 fish.
I pull my boat down one day and there was 150 spawning on the goddamn boat launch?
I mean,
I don't think that's going to work, boys and girls.
No, good luck.
But and I've heard people say, no, he killed a fish. I remember Dougie McKnight got that giant freaking brown, right?
30 plus.
And I was just so hoping he'd bring it to me to mount it.
Yeah.
I wanted to mount that.
That's a so mean bad. Looking bastard.
Yeah.
God, he had a snout on.
And it was like, this isn't going to hurt, like you said, that fish is a complete predator.
That fish and is that hurting fish, the population.
He's
of fish.
Eating.
Yes.
He's eating a lot. But anyway, you're saying Lando.
So Lando, I went up there and it was really early fall. Maybe not really early fall, but probably mid, late September. And those fish, the brown trout, are not spawning in there at that time, mm-hmm. right? But I go up there and we're swinging for brown trout. And
there's a lot of fish in there. They're just not spawning in September.
Yes. And there's not really a lot of brown trout in there regardless. No matter what time of year, there's not a lot of brown trout. There's a lot of rainbows.
That's what they plant.
And this guy comes up to me and he goes, you see any browns? And I'm like, no. He goes, I can't wait for them to start spawning so we can finally get them. And I'm looking around. I was like, is this guy an industry plant? I mean, there's no, he's got like seven teeth on top and bottom. He's just a total hick. From Helena and you know, he's when people think of people who are killing fish or you know, well, most, raping beds, that's what they're thinking of. It was this guy.
Well, we had a guy on the snake one time tell us, we were fishing, I forget where we were, down low somewhere, and a guy says, how'd you guys do? He pulls in a jet sled right beside us, right?
So, yeah.
We got a couple, three in here. He goes, you know, the secret to this is find them shiny spots and they'll be on them.
Yeah, the feeding gravel.
The feeding gravel. Find them shiny spots, Johnny. Goes, thank you.
Yeah.
He's so polite.
Well, the next time I was up at Lando was that the next spring, because I wanted to get up there before they'd started spawning, because I'd heard of, you know, rumors of these giant lake fish coming out. Like, it's basically like steelheading as close as we get in Montana.
Yeah, for sure.
And so I went up there to go chase them. I was too late. There's fish spawning all over the place. So I walked out to try to get on the outside of the beds, like walk above them, because I just saw all these beds lined up on the inside. I made two casts, got two fish. They were definitely both spawning. And then I'm like, yeah, this, you know, this is gross. They're dark fish, whatever. So I just walk out. I get up onto the top of the cliff and I look down. The entire river's red.
Yeah.
You can't get outside
bank
the beds
bank.
There.
It's impossible.
I was trying to swing the giant water to find non-spawning fish. They're
you
all spawning
walk right
there.
Across that thing.
And there are probably 40 people lined up, you know, with double bead rigs, with giant weights on them. I mean, and I've got a video on my phone I took of one guy, and I'm behind a bush like this, you know, and you see him kind of like looking around. And he makes a cast.
Shoot.
Ripping his rig. Yeah, he's just trying to snag him.
Yeah, why would you need to? I mean, there's so many fish.
Oh, my Lord.
But that's a great opportunity right there. You want to kill a fish? There's a great spot.
That's a great
go
spot.
Kill. That's a planted. It's like those mountain lakes.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the mountain lakes that Mel and I fish, that I don't know if, did I post that picture or not? I don't know. I don't know if I post or not, but she was riding her horse out there, probably naked or something.
I don't think you posted that one.
I didn't? I don't know. But we were fishing and she, I don't like it when, you know, I don't think her mom wants me to know about that.
Right.
So I don't post those up. I don't want her to know about that. But I don't know. But she was just crushing fish, right? Yeah. Absolutely stupid. That was like, I asked her, I caught three or four, I says, every cast, right? And they're all like 16 to 19 inch cutties.
Nice.
They're just ass kickers. They were a blast. But after five or six, it's like, babe, you bored yet? No.
No, really?
No, not even a little bit. And so I walked around the lake and come back. And she, if she made a cast without a fish, I didn't see it. See, it probably happened, but I didn't see it. So I get back and I'm like, how about now? Can we, let's go do something around
the fire or something.
Yeah, whatever. And so we're going to go back up the next year and the whoever Mel talked to said it froze out, killed all the fish.
Fuck.
Well, there's fish in it right now. You think they spawned? We plant those lakes a lot. And most of them do not survive without planting.
Right.
I don't know if that high up.
Have you ever been in those mountains in the winter? Mm-hmm. Pretty inhospitable places.
Yeah.
When it gets negative 60.
And that ice is 5 feet deep and, you know, oxygen evaporation sets in and everything dies and boom, they start over and you got fish in them next year. What the hell happened? Mm-hmm. So that in particular, because he called that out and I just don't buy into, I don't buy into it. But that's, like you said, I'm probably contrary to most people because we have been so brainwashed into believing that that's what saved all of our trout. You know, it wasn't the conservation efforts. It wasn't stopping planting. It wasn't all the things that this state in particular did and was so ahead of its time, you know, stopping meander line, you know, bringing them back, not letting them straighten the river. The shit that we used to do to rivers to kill them, and then people said that, what got blamed? Over harvest. Well, it had a big part of it when you let them dynamite and poison it.
All right, hard to tell where I did a bad job of doing my job, so we ran out of room on an SD card. Hopefully this cut isn't too awkward, but catch and release. I think I don't even look at that part of regulations when I go fish somewhere. I look for closures.
Mm-hmm.
I don't look at limits. I don't look at anything.
Hooks.
Yeah, I look at hooks, and you know, single fly, two fly, whatever, barbless. I look at that stuff. But in terms of the, you know, the range, the sizes of fish that you're allowed to keep, whatever, the slot limit and all that stuff. I basically skim right over that because I've never really thought about killing a fish anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's just not something I'm interested in, but I also...
Well, that was my point. There's just so few people who are going to go, what? You're just not going to hurt the population.
Now, if I got a giant brown trout somewhere and I knew that I could keep that fish, probably keep it.
Yeah, it's not going to hurt. It's just not...
You ever going to taxidermy that fish I killed?
You were supposed to do it with me.
Oh, yeah.
We were supposed to film it so people could see it.
Are we ever going to do that?
Well, not tomorrow.
Okay. Well, I'm just driving back to the Clearwater, so.
Yeah, you're leaving.
Yeah.
How far is that?
7.5 from here.
You're going to, it's 7:30 right now.
So I'm going to make it to Butte tonight.
Oh, that's not to the Clearwater.
Well, I'm going to make it there tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a different word if they're going to do it tonight.
No.
But no, I would love to. I'm not trying to start a renaissance. On all the mounting skins or anything like that. It's just that I don't think it had an effect. I really don't. I don't think it has. Matter of fact, I would go so far as to say zero. Yeah. I don't think it has any effect. So few people, first of all, mountable fish are so rare.
A statistically insignificant effect.
Yes. And the fish that those fish eat, I'm sure the neighborhood kids would love to have him gone. Because you live in fear every minute of their life.
The bad man's gone. The bad, can't get you anymore.
Yeah. It is.
They probably clap when you kill that fish.
It's
also, to clarify, the fish I killed, I did not kill intentionally. I released it in really deep water. It ate a hook pretty
fish?
Deep. The one that's in your freezer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it ate a hook deep.
I went and found that.
Did, yeah.
Yeah, but I saw it driving up.
Oh, yeah, you saw it driving up to me. I popped the hook out of it and just squirmed out of my arms and rocketed it off. And I didn't really think twice. And then Kelly says, I saw a fish floating. I'm like, fuck, probably.
Yeah.
And it was him.
It is. It's a blood sport. It just has to happen. And it just, I don't want to beat this horse anymore, but it won't kill the world.
Yeah. All right. Let's do, what's something behind the desk you want to show off?
So I'm a little curious.
By the way, shout out to everybody who's come in here and said they appreciate the podcast and everything. There's two gentlemen that came in today, and they just stood there with their arms crossed and said, man, I'm just so happy to see it. I could spend all day looking back here. I'm like, yeah.
We're doing it. We've been talking about this. I'm going to expand the other shop, right? And it's going to be a massive expansion. And there's going to be a second floor, and I was thinking about putting the studio up there.
Do you think Kelly could ever just sit on a couch and watch TV? You think he constantly needs a new project?
But I'm thinking, how do I ever move? If we built a studio, and we had an actual place where we could actually not have Howard and Al's legs touching each other, and they touched me a couple times. I was like, that was a little uncomfortable.
Al's pretty good at footsie, though.
Yeah, well, he was over on the other side, so I'm getting it from Howard.
All right. Yeah.
And so, but if we actually had a studio, a table where we could do, but I just don't know if I could ever move this one out of here. I mean, we'd take this one, but I don't know. It's just so.
Maybe commission a woodworker to replicate.
I built all this shit.
Oh, all right. Well, maybe you
commission me to replicate.
Commission someone to do
well. I couldn't do this. Yeah, that could be a thing. But at any rate, I was thinking, I don't know, maybe I just move it all and reposition it. But back to the new thing on the shelf. I get two or three things a week people send me and have for a long time. And so, but this one's from a really good friend of ours. This is Josh Varner, who's retiring from the 21st Special Tactics Squadron in 21 days, I believe. And
that's the same Josh Varner
does all our hair.
I mean, it's
the best hair guy
in the world.
Yeah. If you're not tying with his hair, you're missing out. But he's moving back to Montana and he's going to go full in. He's always been, working the whole time. He's been supplying us with hair and Charlie.
Imagine being the best in the world and it's your side gig.
It's your side gig and you get it all set up. And then the Air Force tells him 23 months maybe before he retires, you're going to South Carolina or North Carolina. I can't remember which way he went to. Yeah. And he has to pack, he sell everything. He built, just finished his gorgeous tanning room because he tans everything, does all of it himself. And he had to go set it up again for 2.5 years. And then he's moving back now.
Well, then I remember for a while he was having trouble with the humidity over there.
Everything was different.
He had to,
salt contents, everything you do, so temperatures, heat, salt.
I don't think I've ever met him, but he must be one smart fella.
Yeah. He's real quiet, too. Yeah. Scary. But he said, writes a letter to me, and we've been very good friends forever. Matter of fact, Josh was one of the first guys I ever saw on YouTube. He's a spectacular tire.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a really good tire. Huh. And I asked Johnny, who's this kid? I said, I don't know, but he knows a lot about your flies. Ties them better than you, too. Like, what a dick. But anyway, he said, seeing as my last stop in the service is with the 21st, I figured I'd send the shop our customary going away gift. Hope all is well. Not sure what this means, because I'm not sure what this is for a going away gift, but there's a lot of implications. There's a lot of things that this brings to mind.
But
yeah. I'm not sure.
Come back here.
Yeah, I'm not sure that what's going to happen. I'll get the full story on it, but how badass is that, yeah. Right? And so we haven't found a place, but very cool. And you'll hear a lot more about Josh. Josh will be on the podcast when he gets back. Josh will do. We'll probably go up and shoot a show just on the process, because it's fascinating to see how we get all this shit that's in here to tie with doesn't just jump out of, out of its skin and show
There's
up there.
A lot of natural material.
An enormous
amount. Means it comes from animals.
Yeah, but somebody had to shoot to eat.
Or collect.
Collect, yes. Deer hair is that's a byproduct from when they take them to the tanneries.
Yeah.
Or not tanneries, to the processors. We get our hides just by, that's a throwaway.
Yeah.
So you go and you pay the processor, whoever's doing it, to store them or to salt them or to get them out, get them where they can cool them, whatever they do, before you can get back and get them and collect them. And it's all, it's just random. You can imagine the stink that pile makes. And then you got to deal with that thing. You got to flesh them. You got to tan them. It's a mess. So when you pay your $7, whatever it is, $10 for a piece of hide, think of what it would take to get that there. Mm. And I want to show that, because I wanted to go down to Whiting, but they wouldn't let me show the killing. Remember when we were down, we were going to film the...
Yeah, we're not supposed to talk about that.
Yeah, we weren't supposed to.
I filmed it. I have it.
You do?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it was just... It'd be okay to go watch Tyson do one, but we don't want to do it for our birds. Well, come on. Give me a break.
Tyson probably doesn't want people watching that either.
Yeah, they keep that pretty. But there's a little more. They have a few more than we do at Whiting. Or they do.
Yeah, they got a couple.
Shit. Tyson. Jake called me today and I forgot to call him back.
Sorry, Jake.
Forgot to call you back today. I was only on the phone for 7 hours straight.
By the way, if you forget anybody's name in the fishing industry, there's like a
90% chance
it's Jake.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a lot of Jakes. One in the store.
All right, band of the week, what you got?
What do you got? I forgot about this.
I'm going Mako Road. There's no chance you've ever heard a song by them.
Mako Rope?
Road.
Oh, Road.
Mako Road. Kind of like Aussie surf rock.
I'm trying to think. God, I got so many I've already used. I don't remember. 40 to be one, or 40 to be exact.
Yeah, yeah, my list of bands we've used has gotten quite long. You could reuse some. Actually, what I'm going to do? I'm also going to reuse Lynyrd Skynyrd.
I was going to ask if I used Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Oh, I did.
But did I?
No.
Because I was just listening to him. I put him on that. I got that playlist thing now that you showed me about.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I got Lynyrd on there. I'll go Lynyrd if I haven't used him.
Each day.
I got him on my phone.
Each day I was steelheading. I would we're up at 4:30, driving to the run for first light. And I'd always play that song, I Need You. Just thinking about the steelhead. Ooh, baby, I need you.
Oh, you're sick. Makes I was going to go, I'm holding Lynyrd. I'm going to go Black Crowes. I was listening to those guys.
Nice.
And nobody would have ever thought I'd listen to those guys.
No.
I really like those guys.
I saw you tapping your foot in here the other day with Alice in Chains playing.
No way.
I don't think you knew it was them.
Mm-hmm. No. Well, they might, everybody
maybe,
has.
Maybe I'm lying. I might
maybe
be lying.
They have one moment. I don't know.
They were playing in here. You weren't tapping your foot, but they were playing and you weren't screaming at somebody to shut them off, so that was impressive. Yeah. Should have heard the song Will put on yesterday.
Oh, I've heard some weird shit in this place.
All of us are like, hey,
Yeah, yeah, there's some weird. Oh, Chuck goes down some dinky rat holes, boy, I'll tell you right now. And then Jake's really gotten into classic old country.
Yeah, which is great. I love that vibe of playing.
I was thinking about going some serious old country, like way back when, but I don't know. I wrote the Black Crows down. I want to make sure I remembered that one.
Yeah.
We'll go some old country next week.
Also, real quick shout out before we end, Dale at the Red Shed. I got my Red Shed sweatshirt on right now. I actually put a slide-in logo on the front because I don't like sweatshirts that don't have anything on the front. So it's kind of sacrilegious. Double flash.
Does it got Red Shed on the back?
Red Shed on the back.
Badass.
Yeah.
Do you talk to Poppy?
No, I've never met Poppy. He's never been in there. I met a couple of his good friends.
He's just dodging you, dude.
Yeah, I know he's dodging me. Well, apparently he's having some like health trouble. And, yeah, he is. So.
One of the greatest.
But Dale's awesome. If you guys have any Steelhead questions, they've got an online website and their retail location.
We have
location.
Called out Red Shed many times on this show.
Many times. And they are
class
awesome. I mean, I was looking for a new head for a rod I got, and Dale just goes, how long are you around for? Like 4 or 5 days. He goes, sweet, man, here's a bunch of heads. Go try them all. Just didn't ask my name. Sent me straight out the door with them.
All right, yeah, cool. That's a.
They're quality. Great. They have a very, very cool rod there, the Red Shed Special from Miser.
I've heard you talk about this.
They've got, I mean, I think it's all Miser's rods that have that jungle cock inlaid just above the cork, but some of the most ornate cork work I've ever seen. Ted brought his in the other day, and we're all.
That's the thing about spey fishing. You get a lot of time to look at your rod.
A lot of time. A lot of time. Yeah, 4 days, one fish. Actually, no, I sent you the photo.
You had a tug.
I got a squaw fish, too. Or northern pike minnow, as we're supposed to call them, I think.
I don't know what they're called.
That was on a fly you tied that had jungle cock on it.
Really?
Yes. And
I gave you a fly?
No, you gave it to Chuck. Chuck gave it to me.
Chuck's fired. We're looking for a new manager. Send resume.
Just kidding, Chuck.
Thanks for watching.
Yeah, episode 41. We'll see you this weekend at the Wretched Mess Festival in West Yellowstone. Live
it's
podcast.
Be a hoot.
Tying.
Supposed to be nice weather.
Casting competition. I might get my ass kicked. We'll see.
I doubt it. We'll see.
See you next time.
Thanks for watching.